Mini episode 1846 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1846. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, our NBA hoops analyst, Ben Chu. And if you're thinking to yourself, he might be coming on to discuss Summer League and NBA transactions, then you must be a mind reader. You must be clairvoyant, because that's why we have Ben on the show here today. We are taping this in advance of, I guess, the semifinals and the finals of Summer League, but the meat of it is basically behind us. So we're going to be addressing everything that we've seen, the things that really jump out at us from the 30 teams that participated in Summer League, as well as some of the key transactions. Because again, we have not yet hit the dead zone in that. You know, when you start to get to later July and then into August and whatever, like outside of 2022, heading into Labor Day weekend, the Donovan Mitchell trade would certainly rock my world. Outside of that, you generally, when you get past this point in July, there's not a lot more big dominoes to fall. Just the fact that I can remember one of them off the top of my head. And yes, it does have to do with my favorite team, but I would remember that regardless. They don't tend to happen that much from here on in. So we've got a lot that we can break down, Ben. And great to have you on as always, buddy.
Well, it's a pleasure. Like, I feel like there's a, like, can we do it?
Yes. Who are you, The Rock?
Can you tell what The Rock is cooking, Rick, in this timeline?
Yes. Oh my. Well, it's Dame time yet again in Portland, which this is one of those things where I think you and I were kind of like joking about this. I think it was off air, but I think we were kind of like, well, that would be kind of funny if he went back to Portland. Ha ha ha. And then it's the thing where, again, this is the whole deal, as we said previously, where similar to Kevin Durant a couple of years ago when he became a free agent and signed with Brooklyn, whoever signed him was going to end up paying for his red shirt season. Sure. So it's basically, you know, the 2 years after that, the 14 mil per year. And I think Dame's actually got an out after the first of those 2 years that he would actually be playing. So this is not necessarily a long-term deal. It is one of those things where, again, when you look at the timeline, Portland is still trying to grow with a younger core, and we'll get to part of that a little later because that's been kind of interesting in Summer League. Yeah. Yes, but it's one of these deals where presumably he's not coming back in to play the same role in the 26-27 season that he did for all the years previously, because that's going to just yoink all of the airtime basically from the guys that you're trying to develop and go with as part of the future. But he seems still at this point in time too advanced to be in the role of like Gramps' sixth guy off the bench.
Right.
So it's like, it's a weird fit, Ben.
I know it is a weird fit, and I would use the analogy too on top of it, Rick, is that I feel like he's in this weird world. It's like, if he is coming back off of, obviously we have discussed this, an ACL injury.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know how his best scenario is going to be at this point.
Yeah.
So if we're in that scenario, it's like, well, we will assess the best he can be, but I use this rule too as like, especially for anyone coming off an ACL injury. And we discuss this like with LeBron, with Tyrese Haliburton, with a lot of these other guys, is that if you're dealing with an ACL injury, it takes a lot to come back.
Uh-huh.
And now, courtesy to Rick, like, it feels like to me, just as a human, is like, this is Dame's best case scenario where he can come back and enjoy his own personal scenario. Mm-hmm. because he has a 3-year contract. Mm-hmm. And I thought that he also has a he is one of the few players in today's NBA that has a no trade clause.
Yes. At this point.
So mm-hmm. In his final year, he is going to be a scenario that is, he will maybe accept that scenario, but I've also seen scenarios in today's NBA. It's like, well, you have a no trade clause, but you also have a 3-year at that point. It's going to be very interesting.
It is going to be, and again, as far as how the fit goes, again, there is the hometown return story, but this is a team that's loading up on veteran backcourt talent here. Drew Holiday is there. Now, that's one where you could see that as just sort of a passing through kind of a deal as he makes his way to the next contender to play with. That's one where he doesn't really seem to fit because, again, Portland, it doesn't seem like they're ready to go on an aggressive timetable in the next year or two. But I will say this, that this is a thing where, again, for as much as I'm not going to necessarily lump you in with me for as much as I clowned on Portland a little more. I think we all did on draft night, especially from a value perspective. But good old Yang Hansen here, the whole thing about the Chinese version of the Joker. Again, stylistically, as far as at least being a playmaker and bringing that part of it to bear, he is really showing up pretty good so far. He's showing an ability a little bit on the defensive end as well. So this is a pick that could end up really paying dividends for them. And this is one where, again, with them ending up making the deal to move Cedric Coward to Memphis, that's one where, again, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny on this, particularly if Coward, who is one of the big hipster picks out there to be a big, rookie contributor, if he can really get it going. But again, Portland, I mean, I say this as somebody who, again, was laughing at him at the time. Already, if you squint hard enough, you can see a scenario where maybe they get the last laugh on this one.
Well, I mean, we've discussed this too, Rick. Like, it's a weird scenario for Portland because if you're looking at the tail end of their season for last year, it's like they went 13-17 at the end of the year. It's like, that's not a bad record, but you're literally bringing guys in to use a scenario. And the big thing for me, just as a human, is like, let's just be honest. It's like Portland had a timeline for the last 2 years where it wasn't great. Let's just be honest, Rick. It wasn't a great scenario.
But sure. Right.
But you now bring in guys, you bring in Jan Hansen, you bring in a lot of these additional picks, because this is the biggest thing I feel like a lot of people are mistaken at the end of the day, is that even if this deal is not the best, like, they're literally getting picks for the next 2 seasons, essentially.
Right.
So you got 2 pick swaps within the last 3 years.
Right.
So, and again, I'll use this rule. It's like, I'm not going to say, like, oh, Rick Morris, this is the best Western Conference team to get to that level.
Sure.
But they have a lot of good players now, and I use the rule. It's like, if you have the opportunity to build out your team, their GM, essentially Joe Cronin, has done a very good job of just focusing in on trying to do the best he can. I'll use this rule too, right? Because, like, it's a weird scenario. It's not often that we get to see a player come back to a franchise. Like, I know, like, we're talking the Cleveland time because, we saw LeBron come back to Cleveland.
Right.
And I was going to be honest, just as a fan of basketball, it's like, when there were a lot of people talking about, like, oh, okay, Dame's going to go find another scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, that's interesting. It's cool. But I feel like there's a lot of people that's like, no one thought Dame's coming back to Portland, of all things.
Right. And it's one of those things where, again, and we'll see what he comes back like, again, with this kind of injury at that age, if it affects his mobility in any kind of a way to where he may not exactly be the same as he was at that point in time, which would really be a shame. And again, it's a thing where it was a slow diminishment, but he was already kind of slow. It's just on a natural aging curve, right? But it's one of those things where, again, like, he was still, a featured player in Milwaukee. You can look at that like, oh, there's your big two. And it's like, he's going to a team to maybe be the sixth man to a bunch of youngsters. Like, it's just really weird. Like,
it's really interesting. I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah, like
you seem to. I mean, can I use the best analogy I can make, which is in the NFL.
We've seen
this before, where like I'll use this rule because I know you're Miami Dolphins fan. We saw that in the late with Dan Marino.
Yeah.
Well, he got his best options around, but it was also just like it's so fascinating because if we're going to be honest, Rick, I don't think we ever thought a scenario would play out where Damian Lillard would come back to Portland 2 years after this big trade.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It wasn't a likely scenario. It's like it's like we used to rule. It's like, oh, okay, of course he's going to come back at some point, but.
Yeah, and that's – well, I mean, there's a couple of things that and right about the time of when he left, maybe this was a little bit before when he left, that you couldn't have bet on being the case. If you'd have gone back a couple of years ago, the 2021 Western Conference Finals between the Clippers and the Suns, and if you would have said, hey, you know, the Suns, they're going to put a big push on. They're going to go get Durant, and they're going to get Bradley Beal, and they're going to really try and make it happen. And then – but a couple of years down the road, they'll cut Bradley Beal for nothing, and he'll go to the Clippers. And here we are. So the two teams have played 4 years ago for the Western Conference Championship. And again, Beal is not what he was previously. I mean, more dramatically so, I think, than Lillard in that sense, with the sense that, again, Beal is at least – you know, somebody that's remained healthy. Lillard has now had a couple of these injuries that have happened. But – Beal, at a certain point in time, before he left Washington, he was already starting to lose the three-point stroke a little bit. Yeah. And in this league, that's one of the things that makes you the big-time star. So he goes to a Clippers team that, again, very interesting collection of wings there, but it's like they're sort of the rich man's version, I think, of Portland. Because I look at the Portland roster, and I'm just like, how's everything going to fit together? And I look at the Clippers.
Scenario, Rick.
Yeah. Yeah, how does Bradley Beal fit with them? I mean, it's one of those things where, again, you know, if Harden is healthy at the same time as Leonard and as Beal, then it's an interesting kind of a thing. Brooke Lopez comes in. That's a help in the front court here. That gives them a little bit extra oomph down in the pivot there. But it's one of those situations where, just in a low-key kind of a way, you can kind of see Ballmer working here in terms of, I think I read something that like just about all those contracts will be expired by 2 years down the road.
Yes,
I think with the possible exception of Harden, I think so. You know, it's either Harden or Leonard. But yeah, it's one of those things where, again, in the meantime, it's a very interesting thing. And one of the most interesting phenomena, I think, in the NBA, this is one of those things where I look at it like the way that we talk about Eric Spoelstra and what a universally recognized genius he is. And I look at it with the Clippers, and I think everybody at this point pretty much recognizes Ty Lue as being a genius. And it's one of these things where in the NBA, like you can coach LeBron to a title, but you don't get your flowers until you've proven yourself after that. And Ty Lue is in that spot now. He has elevated in his – I mean, I always thought he was at that level, me personally. But, like, the rest of the world's catching up to me with the job that he's doing with the Clippers.
I mean, the Clippers, and if we want to talk about Bradley Beal, it's a very interesting scenario because
– yeah.
I'm going to be honest, Rick, and you and me can use this whole scenario is that did we ever think off of Bradley Beal's contract he could go to another team? It's not likely.
Right. Yeah.
It's like
literally
at that point over $100 million.
Yeah, that he would get cut and stretched. But I guess after it happened to Dame, anything was possible, right?
Anything is possible now, right? But I'm also saying, too, it's like, and we brought this up in a previous podcast, like, we've discussed this just as human beings who love the NBA, is that there are a lot of people in this town where, like, oh, you know, like, they're spending too much money.
Mm-hmm.
And we've proven this, how, like, that doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
You could literally you can sign a guy for $200 million and you could still make it work.
Right. Yeah.
I'm just saying that's because we were in a timeline, especially like I see this too in the NFL. It's like, oh, that human being who is getting into a contract is too much money.
Right.
And I used this rule. It's like, there is no contract in this timeline, Rick.
Right.
It's in that level anymore. It doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah.
If you can make the numbers work, you can make the numbers work.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And again, when you get stuck, particularly in the NBA, you see it more with the 53-man rosters. Teams like, unfortunately, my Dolphins becoming a real Stars and Scrubs kind of a team over the course of the last 3 to 4 years. And that's what ends up really happening is if you have mismanagement of the cap. But like for those out there, you're like, TJ Watt is overpaid. No, he's not. And I, as a lifelong Steeler hater, it pains my heart to see them actually doing the right thing here for once and loosening up the purse strings, which the Rooney family is generally not want to do. But yeah, no, I mean, there's no such thing as overpaying somebody. If, again, if he has the level of talent and if he helps you in the ways that you need helped. And of course, you know, the cheat code in all of these things is when you can get any kind of significant help when guys are on their rookie contracts. And that's what we're looking at here with Summer League, with some of these guys coming in. So not only Yang Hansen, there have been a couple other guys that have been really turning heads thus far, really kind of raising their stock over the summer. Juwan Behringer for Minnesota. Nick Clifford has had a very good summer as well. Liam McNeely has actually been the best white guy that Charlotte's had this summer, surprising some people.
We're not talking about Jan Knepel, right?
Exactly. And by the way, Ben, here's a painful one for you. As if OKC needed it, Brooks Barnheiser coming in and making it happen for the Thunder.
Well, I mean, we're in the timeline too. Like I know we're recording about 2 days before everything gets chaotic for the Summer League titles. So.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be really interesting. And the one thing I will always say about OKC is that they've done a very good job of finding the best level of talent and bringing it within internally. Because as you know too, Rick, like we've seen a lot of scenarios in whether it's the NBA or the NFL, even in Major League Baseball, where a team's like, okay, we're good. We'll set Pat.
Right.
But the one thing I'll give credit to OKC is like they are not setting Pat. They are literally looking for the next guy to the next guy.
Yeah. Well, and particularly in today's NBA, it's really almost a once-in-a-lifetime kind of a situation for them. That's why the whole thing of, like, when everybody was like, are they going to keep the big three together? I was just like, what kind of a stupid question is that? Because, you know, come on. Like, are you going to – I realize what they did in 2012, and they paid a big price for that in terms of perception and everything else with James Harden, but they hadn't won a title. This is a thing where, again, they know that all of us out here are extrapolating that they can win – at minimum, a couple more titles in the next couple of years. So, I mean, that would be one of that. I mean, that's basically like trading Babe Ruth territory. If you just be like, you know what, we're not going to, you know, Chet Holmgren, you know, good luck in your future endeavors. You know, I mean, that was one of those things where I never took it seriously that they weren't going to do this because part of it is too, is that, and I know you would agreed with me on that point too, because again, these things aren't even kicking in next year, and I think some of it starts to kick in the year after, but that's the whole thing. You've got that in-between spot of locking these guys down, and when you still have cap space, which is really dangerous for the rest of the league and any of the contenders like my Cavs, that is not good
news. And I'll use the rule too, Rick. Like, the one thing we haven't talked about on this podcast is, like, the OKC building their new arena – it's going to come in 2028, 2029, and I've seen a lot of the videos, like, and now, courtesy, like, we've discussed this, like, I am not the biggest OKC fan.
I get it.
But it's a gorgeous arena from what I've seen.
Sure.
It's a gorgeous arena. I wish the Cavaliers could have that level of arena, but.
I know, yeah.
It's a gorgeous arena. But at the end of the day, too, what I will say to you about OKC is that you have to respect the scenarios, like, I almost feel like, too, in terms of, as we have discussed previously with their ownership group, they're moving on a little bit. Like, this has been discussed. Like, they're moving on. Like, this is not the whole scenario of, like, you know, the old Seattle ownership group that's trying to move forward. It's like, no, it's like, they're legitimate scenarios where there's going to be a group of guys who want to grow the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Right.
And I do feel like, too, it's like, I totally understand it because I'm like, if you're in a scenario like you are the only game in town, why wouldn't you grow the only game in town, right?
Right. That is really, you know, the spot that they're in. It's a chance to be able to, you know, if anybody follows them into the market, which is unlikely in the near to medium term future, but to really set that impossible bar, Ben, as the only game in town. So, yes, I mean, that is something that they have going on there.
Too, I'll bring this up, too. It's like that has been the NBA scenario forever.
Mm-hmm.
They always want to be the only game in town.
Yes. And that is, yeah, I mean, they love whenever that is the case. And, again, you look at what one title in Portland in 1977, what that can do for generations as far as, you know, setting up a one sports town to really just cherish a team endlessly. And that's not what Oklahoma City has to look forward to. You and I have talked about this before. That comparison maybe should make the blood run cold a little bit because, again, with Bill Walton, with the young team that they had, everybody thought they had a real long runway. And, you know, that didn't end up being the case. But it would take, you know, multiple things going wrong in Oklahoma City, I think, to match that. One of the things here in Summer League, where you sometimes see this with some of the top contenders, this kind of bridges a little bit of what we talked about with free agency and the previous time we had talked free agency, as well as guys that are in summer league. And this is one of these things where just to bring this up, I almost feel like somebody on the floor of the House of Representatives saying, point of personal privilege, Mr. Speaker, as I go to mention something about the Cleveland Cavaliers. But
yeah.
I talked previously about I thought that a really underplayed signing in the offseason thus far had been Larry Nance Jr. Because, again, just getting somebody in there to eat minutes at the four spot, particularly at the times when Dean Wade wasn't as healthy, and the fact that they seemed to prefer playing Dean Wade at the three to playing him at the four, such that you were having to run Tristan Thompson out there, which right. You really don't want to have to do in the year of our Lord 2025. Larry Nance Jr. coming back, I thought, was something people were sleeping on a bit. But watching in summer league, this mofo, Naquan Tomlin, you know, he had a few moments there with the Cavs last year in garbage time. But, I mean, what this guy is doing here, you know, they say that in summer league you can't necessarily make a reputation, but you can lose one or have it diminished. Yeah. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that, because particularly the guys that are hitting three-point shots that you don't expect to, and not that he's out there like Steph Curry or anything like that, but,
no.
I mean, he's flashed an all-around game such that you look at him right now and he passes the eye test on somebody that can soak up a bunch of minutes there. So, I mean, him and Nance Jr. for a spot in the rotation is going to be a very underrated thing to keep an eye on in training camp this year.
Well, Rick, I know we're on a episode for Ohioans, so I got to get prepared.
It's worth noting.
It has been fantastic.
He has.
He was one of the dudes who, like, he's giving extra effort. He can make plays. And we saw it at the tail end of the last Cavaliers, he's like, he was at the end where, like, there's a lot of rest going on. I was like, he was a guy who could make plays, grab rebounds, could do a lot of great things. So,
yeah.
I feel like the one thing, like, if we're going to talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers, is that.
Sure.
Jalen Tyson.
Looking good.
You know? Yeah. Like, Naquan Thompson. Good.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Tyrese Proctor. Fantastic.
Yes.
And, like, most of the season in the summary for him, bad, but he had a 35-point game in the third game for Cleveland. So, you know, my thing, too, is, like, especially with summer league, is that I always use this rule, Rick, is that as long as your guys are not performing, you're good.
Right.
And at the end, it's like, you know, it's like you just need to make sure they're doing that. And we all know, too, also on top of that, Rick, there's a lot of guys in summer league.
Mm-hmm.
That's some very interesting scenarios in this timeline. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you look at it with the extreme youth of Brooklyn, for example, using all of their first-round picks that they had here this year, And what we've seen thus far, and again, yeah, it's just summer league, but again, when guys flash the ability to do certain things, you know, some of this is going to be apples and apples to the NBA. Not all of it, but there's at least glimpses here and there. And it's the glimpses that we're looking for. This Igor Demin coming in here, you know, everybody thought that it was like every first-round pick they got, strong on playmaking, but I don't know about the offense, and I don't know about
the talk about Igor Demin, Rick?
Yeah.
I want to talk about Igor Demin.
Yeah, let's do it, because this guy's hitting the threes.
He's a fascinating prospect in my opinion.
He is. He is.
And he had two very good summer league games, it's like happened.
Yeah.
Not great. But in his third summer league game, he hit three three-pointers.
Yeah.
At the tail end of that game to prove at least to me, like he has the opportunity to expand his field of vision. At least
yes, he is really showing a lot this summer, and that's one of those things where again, and I remember I don't know if it was a YouTuber or who it was, but one of these pundits that likes to do film things here, like Igor Demin is the worst prospect in the draft, the most overhyped, overrated guy. That guy should be deleting his account by now.
He's just all big trash.
Yes. Yeah.
Big trash. He is.
Yeah.
Look,
yeah.
I understand too, because like, oh, okay, he's a guy who's like 6'8", you know.
Yeah.
Not the best, but he was not the best of the star summer league, but he showed progression to being what we all think he could be, which is either a starting one guard or starting two guard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's really gotten it done, and he's really, he's showing what he's capable of here, which is what you're looking for in summer league. You're looking to see what guys are capable of. And that's one of those things here too, that for somebody where there was some questions, for example, there's been some up and downs here, which I think there's going to be a lot of up and downs during the season as well. Jeremiah Fears, a guy that he was deservedly, I think we talked about that third tier prospects between 3 and 7 in the draft. I think he was deservedly on that level because of his upside, but the biggest developmental guy of the bunch. You're seeing it now. And that's one of those things where it's just like, In terms of things that are just career killers, in terms of location, that guy being in New Orleans with another jumbled mess of a roster and a lot of young guys, they're going to need touches. I just wonder and I worry about what's ahead for him in that situation there, because that's a guy that needs to be getting sort of the Fabergé egg treatment somewhere to get the best. In New Orleans, it's just basically like throw him in there like, good luck, kid.
Yeah, and I mean, as someone, we're going to use this real life, very one of the few people in the world watching all these summer league games, Rick, but Jeremiah Fears, showed a lot of promise.
Yeah.
And he has the ability to get to the basket, but again, let's just be honest, he is under 20.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest, like, he's under 20, it's like, you're not going to know fully, but the big thing, especially with New Orleans, like, I wasn't sure if you saw this earlier today, but Derek Queen apparently had a hand injury. So that's going to be an interesting scenario for that scenario. But and I guess the real too is like for New Orleans, like it's a very interesting scenario for that franchise is that they are in this weird scenario. It's like you have the old guard and the new guard coming.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like if I've used any rules, like if you have the new guard and the old guard coming in, it's not a good scenario.
No, it's not. And that's where, and again, so Derek Queen, who, again, everybody was really kind of high on before this happened, you know, the wrist injury, which almost certainly is going to take him out of the start of the season. So that's one more thing that is weighing against New Orleans here. They clearly.
Can I interject, Rick? Right on the line. So he's probably going to miss some time, but.
Yeah. And that's where, and again, That was the reason they were willing to give up such a hefty draft haul to get him was how high they were on him. So it's one of those things where they look like they're in for another brutal year like they were last year. But, the summer of 2026, you know, A.J. DeBanza out there, they're going to have a real high pick. At least they're going to have – oh, wait. Whoops.
Oh, no.
That's right.
We're going to get to that point. It's like the Pelicans, like, you know. and again, like, I'm not going to disrespect Troy Weaver and Joe Dumars, but
yeah,
it feels like, can I use this rule? Because I don't get to bring it up a lot, Rick. It's like,
yeah,
paying the fool
yeah.
for the full scenario.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're not winning at that point unless you literally get a franchise player at that point.
Pretty much. And that's where, and like, look, if my hometown has to bear the shame of having the Ted Stephian rule, the guy that was such a big, the biggest frittata in league history as far as owning a team, to where we have to ban owning trading consecutive number one picks in a year. Can we add to that the Joe Dumars rule that says, for your own good, you cannot trade with Atlanta anymore, because it never ends well for you. Yeah. Never again, ends like well.
I know they're a new VP of everything at
yeah.
this point. I mean, yeah. you got to give credit to Onai Saleh, who is – I'm going to give him credit because – he has done an amazing job with Atlanta in the last postseason. Because let's be honest.
Yeah.
Before all this chaos happened, Rick, I would use this as like, oh, are we treating Atlanta seriously? Probably yeah. not. We're not.
Yeah. And like.
And he brought in, on top of that, like, he brought in, you know, Kristaps Porzingis. He's going to have a healthy Johnson this time went. So they're an interesting team right now. And I'm going to be honest, Rick, like, there is a legitimate time when we have discussed this, like, where the Hawks were going to be not relevant at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not relevant. And
right.
now they're in a timeline because of all the stuff going on in the Eastern Conference. They're relevant now.
They are. And ironically, Kristaps Porzingis, who was a huge acquisition for them, doesn't factor into the point that I'm about to make. But suffice it to say, this is the kind of weird thought that you're only going to get on the FDH Lounge. But it occurs to me that if we put every NBA team in the Summer Olympics and just had them competing in just all these different events, is there a team in the NBA that would have more gold medals in more different Summer Olympics events than the Hawks? Okay. These guys are just specimens who just feel like they can do anything.
I'm talking about the Atlanta Hawks, Rick. We can talk about Austin Newell, who was a late draft pick that the Hawks traded back to get.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
He fell. He was supposed to go higher than he went. He fell. I remember that from draft night. And, I mean, the Hawks are setting themselves up nicely. I mean, as far as looking at that team, I mean, it's fair to wonder if in that whole collection there, if they have, you know, the one guy or one or two guys to build around. That remains to be seen. But you can't say that there's no chance of that. With all of these guys on the roster, all of these possibilities, you can't say there's no chance that they don't.
And accuracy, Rick, too. Like, he has shown that he is a great player and can step out and hit a 3-point shot.
So,
again,
you know,
I don't think it's likely, but.
Right. But
feels like you can never truly know if a team is. But anyway, and that point, too, just as a GM or a VP at that point, like, that just means, like, you're doing a good job at the day.
It does. I mean, and it helps that they're making all these trades with New Orleans, but they've done a good job. They've done a good job in other areas as well. But as far as various teams in the NBA and in the summer league, I think you mentioned to me off air that there was a scenario that happened. Was it in one of the games that affected possibly multiple teams with the seeding here? That there was something you said where it came down to like a narrow. Thing that happened that
it's
made like
so
a big
narrow,
difference.
It was a very narrow margin, Rick.
Okay.
So there was a timeline, as you probably know too, is like for any of that, it's just so, and at least in today's summer league, it's like the top four teams with the best point differentials get in, essentially.
Okay.
Like for tomorrow, like, and those have always been separated. But I've also used the rule too, is that this is the first time I've ever seen it, Rick. It's like there were six teams who went undefeated in summer league, which is crazy because usually you would say, oh, yeah, there's a bunch of teams that are like not as good.
Right.
But they showed their respect. Like, I know he's just called Atlanta. and Minnesota, who was led by essentially the scenario of, like, you know, Behringer and then also, you know, Terrence Shannon didn't make it. England didn't make it. So,
yeah.
It's an interesting scenario for summer league, but I would also use this rule too is that it's the NBA. There's going to be a guys who you just don't know, but
right.
It's going to be really interesting though too.
Yeah.
But the thing I will say too, Rick, off the top of that is like, there are a lot of guys in summer league who perform very well. I know you watch a bunch of these games too, but I want to see like, who did you think was going to be a guy that had performed to this level?
I thought that coming in, I was a little bit surprised that Knupel had some of the early kind of issues that he did, which I think a lot of that is just whether your shot's falling or not. And some of that is just, you know, it's just not your night sometimes. But he did turn it around a little bit here, you know, subsequently from there. But, you know, I think Ace Bailey, I mean, that's a guy that, again, I really thought, and I continue to, I'm looking forward to the next time I'm on a show, whether it be this show or whether it be one of Joe Stazak's many shows that he sometimes has me on to bust his balls about them passing on Ace Bailey. Because I get that Edgecombe, I think he's going to be an outstanding player in this league. But, I mean, Bailey actually fills a need for them and has the same kind of upside. So that's a thing where, again, a couple of these, you know, young guys that I was pretty high on, certainly Dylan Harper as well. I mean, I think he's proving that he belongs in San Antonio in a very interesting situation, because I think we had gotten the news by the time we had recorded our last NBA segment, but whether we did then or we didn't, we can say now, Wemby's going to be back this year. They treated the blood clot successfully. I was a little bit kind of, not necessarily bemused, but a little confused that it was that big of an issue when he was out, when it was pointed out that like Chris Bosh ended up that ended up kind of tanking the rest of his career. So it's like, I guess in some instances, you know, with your body chemistry, that can be an issue here, but like, I never really, cause like people have blood clots, they get treated, they whatever. So it was like, I was kind of missing the whole thing of like why people thought it was potentially career ending or career threatening at the very least. But there was enough out there to where there was some confusion on this as to what his availability would be this year. But he's going to be back for all, you know, apparently from everything they're saying, this is going to be behind him. And so this is a San Antonio team that's ready to put its foot on the pedal in earnest here. And we've seen in the last couple of years, first it was OKC, then it was Houston. Yeah. And again, Houston, a little bit of a Fugazi 2 seed. We kind of said that at the time.
They were not 2 seed, Rick. We're going to discuss this. Not 2 seed.
Yeah, but I mean, even to become a Fugazi 2 seed at the beginning of the year, we wouldn't have thought that was possible. So do not put a ceiling on what San Antonio can do. Yeah. If somebody was to tell me San Antonio is going to get home court in the first round of the playoffs last year, I wouldn't blink at hearing that at this point. Yeah. You know, they're really just kind of, you know, loading up the team. And it's one of those things where, again, you know, will timelines align? Yeah, as far as like where, you know, De'Aaron Fox is and his point in his career, him being a little bit older here. But again, as we saw with Indiana with Siakam, I mean, it doesn't preclude that you can make a run to the finals. And, you know, San Antonio is a team that's set up even better, you know, for the medium run at the very least, perhaps even a short term than Indiana. Well, certainly better in the short term than Indiana since they won't have Halliburton next year. Let me qualify that. But, yeah, I mean, San Antonio, yeah, I mean, what they're going to be doing, and again, the fact that we are now in a reality where it is going to be Coach Pop exclusively behind the scenes, that's official at this point. He's done. The stroke has pretty much, well, not pretty much, it has ruled out him ever coming back to the bench.
We're in the Mitch Johnson timeline at this point.
We are in the Mitch Johnson timeline, but it's still one of those things where you know, there was a point in time, I don't remember the exact point in the timeline, because even during the 80s, I think he was still pretty hands-on, but there was a point in time when Red Auerbach wasn't even necessarily in an official position, but it was still like, this is Red's team.
Still within the scenario. Right
now. Still in a scenario. And like Coach Pop's going to be in a scenario until the day that he, you know, goes 6 feet under. So it's going to be a thing where it's still, and it's one of those, the house.
Ricky brought the t-shirt out. It's like, he is that dude in this timeline. So.
Yeah, and like it's one of those things where it's like the house that Ruth built kind of a thing. Like the San Antonio organization is what it is because of that. And to think, you know, you go back over a period of time. I don't remember if it was Bob Hill or Brian Hill or whatever, but which guy it was. Brian Hill. Okay. But like that it was so, it was like controversial at the time. And I was like, oh, look at Coach Pop firing him to swoop in and take the reins. Like, I mean, you know, almost 30 years later, it's hilarious.
Wait, Rick, can I get my hand up? Apologies to Brian Hill.
Apologies to Brian Hill, but this wasn't happening with you there. Okay. Like, no, we,
I will say I'll jump in on this because.
Yeah.
Dylan Harper has had a weird summer league because he did not play in the first game.
Right.
He had a little bit in the second and a little bit in the third. So he showed all the promises, like, as we all know, is like he is the son of all people, Ron Harper. So if you're an NBA fan, you know who Ron Harper is in this timeline. So
does this mean that Dylan Harper will one day be traded for Danny Ferry's son?
Dude, I would love that scenario, but I don't think that's bad.
Only a Clevelander would make that joke.
I have a high level of respect for Dylan Harper. Is that in the two games he played, he was very methodical.
Yeah.
That's the best thing you can say for a young player, is that he wasn't trying too hard.
Right.
He was a guy who could spread the floor, make some, like, the big thing I remember, at least from Dylan Harper in the summer league, is like, he was tracking down a block, and he blocked that. And I'm like, okay, that just means you understand the scenario. Like, if you're trying to block someone, like, you get it. I get it at the end.
Right.
So, and again, too, the big thing I know we've discussed is, like, again, like, Cooper Flagg, I feel like we haven't talked about it yet, but I feel like we should. But
sure.
Cooper Flagg had a very average game one, but in game two, it's like he played very well.
Then he broke out.
Had a 50% shooting percentage, and he showed all the things. Like, I'll use this real quick. Is that we did not, I personally, out of courtesy, because as someone who loves summer league, like, I did not think we would have a Cooper Flagg, Dylan Harper summer league game on a Saturday, of all things.
Yeah.
That was not likely. It's like, and they did, like, you know. They did the best they can, but at the end, it's like, I feel like for San Antonio, it's like, Harper is one of those guys that if he can figure out where he needs to go, he is going to be a great player, period.
Yes, yes. And
if if he does not force anything, he's going to be a real good player.
Oh, sure. You know, and Flagg coming in and doing what he did under the circumstances here, that's one of those things where, again, he bounced back strongly in game two. That shouldn't be a surprise. But here's how I look at it, that you've got a circumstance where people talk about, and justifiably so, with Cooper Flagg. They're like, oh, you know, here's a guy who, he's a very rare number one pick overall, the kind of player that only comes along every couple of years. But unlike the rest of them, he's actually in a good situation. He's got a former number one in Anthony Davis, actually another former number one in Kyrie Irving, albeit he's hurt this year. He's got Klay Thompson. He's got the guys around him. He's got way more of a support system than is the case. Well, Dylan Harper's a guy, and I said this on draft night, Dylan Harper's a guy that many other years, in a year without a Wemby, a Cooper Flagg, whatever, Dylan Harper easily could have gone number one. Probably would have, could have, should have gone number one overall in 2024 if he'd have been eligible. So that's a circumstance where we say this about Cooper Flagg. Like, gee, that guy's lucky to be in the right spot, whatever. Which, again, no love to Nico Harrison for that. Fire Nico! Fire Nico! But, you know, just with what's there, with getting Cooper Flagg and the old payback from the NBA for that deal, if you believe the conspiracy theory, as I do, if you drink the Kool-Aid. But Cooper Flagg is surrounded by what he needs to be surrounded by. It's an optimal situation, unlike what you generally get. We don't say that as much about Dylan Harper, but, I mean, he's got Wemby, he's got De'Aaron Fox, now Harry Barnes going to be there next year, so it's like, it's a good situation for him as well. This is a guy that would be a number one overall pick many other years, and he, too, is surrounded by much more optimal of a scenario than you would get for most number one overall picks.
Yeah, but I use this rule too, Rick. Like, who was the rookie of the year last year? That was Stephon Castle.
Yeah, Castle, that's right.
So, yeah. He has the opportunity to find that role. And I, again, we discussed this when we were on the live NBA draft lottery podcast. It's like, yeah, all the teams that are probably the biggest winners, it is San Antonio.
Yeah, I think so.
It's clear. Yeah. San Antonio is like, look, I understand Cooper Flagg goes to Dallas, but San Antonio, a team who has Wemby and a bunch of other great players, this is their timeline, because we've seen this before in the NBA for like the last 10 to 15 years, is that a lot of these teams don't have the guy yet.
Right.
And I feel like at least for the timeline that we're discussing with Dylan Harper, it's like, they're there.
Yeah.
San Antonio has Wemby, De'Aaron Fox, you know, there's a handful of other guys, but
yep.
I have to say, out of respect to San Antonio, it's like, you know, if I'm RC Buf's, like, can I use this real quick? Because I've never said this publicly.
Okay.
Can I use this?
All right.
Good.
Okay.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I literally have a team that's like,
yeah,
a unicorn player in Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah.
And I have a elite scorer in today's NBA, at least in terms of like, you know, clutch narrative, in terms of like, you know, near Fox.
Sure.
And I have a bunch of other guys who are like, they're good. Cool.
Right. Yeah.
There are so many teams who would die for that. That's what
I'm absolutely. Thinking. Absolutely.
They would die for this. And San Antonio is like, they are who they are. You know, it's San Antonio, but
they are. Yeah.
I've used this rule like they are outside of a couple of other teams, they are in the, how do I put this in the sounds? Like, they are in the driver's seat.
They are, as far as being set up for the next several years, they got to be in the top five of the league as far as enviable situation, moving out on the horizon.
I don't think top five in the league, but they're definitely top five in the West.
I mean, but I just mean, you know, media, if we go out as far as the medium term horizon and most enviable situation, if you're a fan, is that a top five situation in the league for you? I would have to think so. I mean,
I would say so, but it's tough though.
Wemby alone makes it that. I mean, Oklahoma City's obviously at the front of the line. My Cavs have to be in there somewhere because they've locked up the core for the next couple of years.
Orlando's in that timeline too.
Orlando's in that timeline. I think San Antonio's ahead of Atlanta because at least you know what the hierarchy is in San Antonio. So, yeah, I mean, I think they could be, you know, top five enviable situation if you're looking at least out to the medium term at this point. But as far as anything else from Summer League here, anything else catching your eye, Ben Chu?
I mean, there's a lot going on right now, Rick. I mean, the top seed right now, like we're recording this on Friday at July 18th, the biggest scenario. And can I put my hands up, Rick? I will be personally shocked if the Toronto Raptors do not win NBA Summer League. I will be shocked.
Okay, we're recording this in advance of that.
Yeah, we're recording this. Okay. I'll say this too. It's like for six guys in the rotation.
Okay.
For last season, like they have six guys essentially. And we're not talking about Colin Murray Boyles, who we've discussed this because we did the full NBA draft. I was like, I'm not the biggest fan of Colin Murray Boyles, but he's shown to me that if you're forced into that scenario, he is not going to be a guy who's like, yeah, it is what it is.
Right.
And the one thing I'll say about Toronto, like, I know, like, I'll use this rule because I know we're in the past, like, we all saw, like, Masai Ujiri is not there anymore.
Right.
But they're building, Rick, a different identity. And it feels like to me they're building a defensive first timeline.
Okay.
And I feel like that's what they're trying to do, but So they're okay. They're a very interesting team because they are the overall number one seed in Summer League right now.
Right.
And I feel like that is what it is. But if we want to talk about other things, do you want to, should we bring up like outside of like Cleveland in that totality? Like, we're going to talk about Jan Johnson. We're going to talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we got into that a little bit before, but yeah, I mean, that's a thing where, again, for something that looks like a reach, something that's a real potential game changer if it ends up hitting, no question about it.
Yeah. And I'll say to Rick, like, I am the most, can I use this joke, the most objective Jan Johnson person of all time. I am the most objective, which is.
Yes.
He is a very interesting prospect. He has the ability to make these passes, and he has the ability to get to the basket with no problem.
Yeah.
But the big thing is, obviously, it's a point that was made when I was watching a lot of these games, that the conditioning isn't there yet. It's going to take a little
right.
bit. Understandable, because, you know, he's 20, like, you know.
Right.
It is what it is, but I would say to those is that, especially in the Portland scenario, is that they're a very interesting team if he gets at least competent. That's what I would say.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And again, they have the bodies in the front court. They can afford to bring them along slowly. But again, if he forces his way into minutes this year, it will be exciting to see. And it will be something that people around the league will be paying attention to, no question about it, as that happens. But as always, I love to break down all of the other hoop stuff with you, Ben Hsu, and we'll see if there's anything yet this summer that will merit getting back together to talk hoops. Otherwise, we'll do this when we do our season preview for 25-26 coming up. Part of me is hoping something justifies us coming on to talk hoops between now and then. Perhaps it will happen, but anyways. Much thanks to you, as always, Ben Hsu. Greatly appreciated. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1846.